Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing forces to power. Catch us on Facebook. That's Huntsville Black. Can't stop us.
Okay, in this episode of United Voices with Sherry Saunders, she's talking with investigative reporter Miko Hayes of the Daily Hayes about a recent DHR kidnapping in Alabama. Good evening. How's everyone doing?
Doing great.
Okay, Sherry, you there? Is Sherry with us?
Yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. I just had to beep over. Unfortunately, without being able to tell you, Marcus, I beeped over to the attorney on this case with the 14-year-old girl. He was quickly trying to give me some information, and when this show is over, I am to call him back. So I apologize to the listeners. I was hoping to catch that before this that went live. And Marcus, thank you for stepping in for me, sir.
Okay, that's fine. The situation is hot and heavy here in Alabama. Okay, we got two other people on the line. Do y'all want to announce yourselves and introduce yourselves?
Yeah, my name is Miko. I'm from Daily Hayes, and we're here in Alabama.
Okay, glad to have you. Now, we have another caller on the line. Maybe they're just calling in to listen, but do you want to announce yourself?
No, absolutely. My name is Janice Rushing. And I'm from Alabama as well. I just called. Sherry asked for me to call in and tell my story. You know, I grew up in the system, so.
Okay. Sherry,
here
you go.
Thanks, everyone, for joining this show today. Once again, I will apologize for taking or attempting to take that phone call with the attorney real quick. This is a explosive situation. Now, what I would like to start off the show with is, since everyone is here to hear the information, I would like to introduce Miko Hayes of the Daily Hayes. This individual has taken time out of his life to come to the state of Alabama and to the rescue of a 14-year-old female child who had been raped. She reported that rape. Her rapist had not arrested up until the time of the birth until thereafter, a few days after the baby was before arrest was made. Now, Miko Hayes, I want to thank you for coming on the show this evening. And, sir, I'll just say from start to finish, if you could give us a rundown of who you are, why you're here in the state of Alabama, why you're trying to save this child, and give us what information you know that you can do so. Once again, audience, no names needed. 14-year-old female child is all that you need to know, and that's how we will do this show. All right, Miko, it's yours. Take it away, brother.
Okay, I want to step in and say something right there. Like you said, no names will be mentioned, and we also want to say that the person is the accused rapist. He has not been to trial yet that I know of.
That is correct.
Okay,
that
so we want to, yeah, we, just for disclosure.
He is innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, okay.
He has been described as the rapist, and I apologize to
okay.
the audience. I should have done better.
No, that's fine. We got it covered.
He is an adult. So he's made a decision. He feels one way about it. The girl feels another, and that will be hashed out in court. But I apologize. I should not have referred to him as the rapist. I was using the word of the 14-year-old child, the description that she gave. So once again, Miko, just let our audience know who you are and what you know, and so take it away.
Okay. Well, my name is Miko. I am an investigative journalist for Daily Hate, and we were in Washington, D.C. over child protection services reform, and we caught wind of this case down in Alabama. And so we basically packed up everything and drove to Alabama that next morning after we found out about that. Since then, we have been with the family. We've spoken with the mother. There was even a live stream on our Facebook page of talking with the mother and trying to clear up some of the air. There's been a lot of rumors going around surrounding this case. For one, there's been a lot of questions about the rapist, which right now he is charged with statutory rape. Second degree, he is 19 years old. There were a lot of questions that it was he was living with the girl at the time, that they were dating, that it may have been a family member, and all of those are just not true. We can't really go into a lot of detail on the story behind that, but those were all rumors and allegations. And so what happened here was at 27 weeks pregnant, DHR stepped in and really started pressuring this girl to have an abortion instead of having this child. And she did not want to do that. She wanted to have the child. And she did. So 2 days after she had the child, when they were still in the hospital, from what we were told while she was breastfeeding, well, and actually before that even happened, they were trying to leave. They kept on telling them they had to wait, and finally the grandfather was told that they could not leave until they spoke to a DHR worker, which they said that was just kind of normal procedure because of the rape involved and the age of the mother. They did kind of think it was a little suspicious because this family has been, I would say, blatantly targeted by DHR for a long number of years. So the worker got there and basically informed them that they were taking the child into state custody while the young mother was breastfeeding. So they left the hospital that night without the baby. It was the next day then DHR showed up at their house, and they removed both the 14-year-old mother and her 14-year-old twin brother. So this is the first time that they've been separated. There's also been some confusion on whether the mother and the child are separated, which as of this point in time, they are not separated. They are in the same foster home. The brother and the sister, though, or the 14-year-old mother and her brother, which, again, are twins, they are in two separate foster homes, and this is their first time separated in their entire lives. I mean, their relationship is close enough to where he was actually in the room with them when she gave birth. They wanted him in there, and he actually cut the umbilical cord for the child. So that kind of gives you an idea of the relationship the two have and how just mentally and emotionally taxing this is to, on top of everything else, to also have these two twins separated from each other.
Well, let me step in and ask a question. Did they give any legal reason for the taking of the 14-year-old boy that by all of the information I have received, and you know this family personally, this is a fine, upstanding Southern family. The grandfather, who's the father that has this family. He is a retired police officer and a pretty fine, you know, upstanding position in his community. Why would the 14-year-old boy need to be removed from his home?
Well, and it seems like what they're doing is kind of a common tactic of basically saying it's for possible safety reasons. Like I said, this family has actually been targeted by DHR for, I think it goes back 21 years now at this point. Their older brother was removed from the house when he was 12 years old, with allegations that no charges were ever brought against, no evidence was ever made, even the family disagreed with him being taken, and they're thinking that that could be what they're using, but the problem is that they haven't given the grandparents any paperwork whatsoever. So as far as what the state is claiming, I don't think we'll know until Friday for this next court date, because at this moment, like I said, they're not giving any paperwork, which is very odd, because, I mean, if you even check a coat at a restaurant, you get a ticket for your coat, but yet they're taking these children and not leaving anything to show why they took them.
But that's the typical thing here in the state of Alabama. That's what they do. They act like they don't have to have any paperwork or any proof. They can just come take your children from you. And it's not right, and it needs to stop.
Well, and you really don't even need to dig too far. I found if you just type in, just a simple Google search, and put in Alabama DHR lawsuit, I mean, the amount of things that pull up are ridiculous, to say the least. And like I said, that's a really simple, basic search. So that's not even really digging into some of the skeletons. That's just getting a basic idea of how broken and corrupt this Alabama Child Protection Services is.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, myself personally, I have a bone to pick with Lawrence County, Alabama, and what they did to me and my little sister when we were very young. When I was 11 years old, I was taken from my dad. Not that saying that I shouldn't have been, because it wasn't a good family environment, but what they did was wrong. They came and took me and my little sister. Oh, we're going to go have an ice cream cone. Y'all want to go get an ice cream cone? We're little kids. Sure, we're going to have an ice cream cone. And it's straight from there, ice cream cone, to the courthouse. So you're talking about being scared to death as little children. You don't know what's going on. And then the man, you know, we both were molested as children. And the man didn't prosecute him whatsoever. They didn't do anything about it. So, and I've lived with that mental trauma all my entire life. And so, like I said, it's time for me to go visit DHR in Lawrence County and see what I can do about that myself. Because even though that was years ago, I can still make some noise about it.
Well, and one thing I want to make clear is that this is not just a state-specific problem. This is not just an Alabama problem or a Michigan problem or a Texas problem. While some of the states do have worse conditions with their child protection services than others, this is a nationwide problem, and it is legal kidnapping. These children are being taken against their will without reasons to back it up. They're completely severed communications with the family. They are illegally detained American citizens, if you really want to break it down.
Well, one of the things that, Mika, I would like for you to discuss, Janice hinted at in what she was saying, and that was that at some point, someone from the county, a representative, came to her and lied straight to her face. Now, me and you and me and the attorney that spoke earlier, we have talked about what happened to the lead-up with the Alabaster Police and the lies. Can you backtrack the story? Because I know our listeners that are following this show are very concerned with what happened and all the information that they can get out. And I don't see any legal reasons why you can't discuss the lead-up to the child being taken, and then right afterwards, and how this young woman was treated. Can you give us an accurate description of how the police, the hospital administration, and its security handled, and of course DHR, how did they handle this situation? Was it professional, or was it a disaster, as I am understanding with the information that I am receiving?
No, we weren't here yet when that actually went down. From what I've been told by Terry from Medical Kidnap and Judah Myers is that it was a 100% disaster. In all honesty, how they described it, I don't even think that it took long enough to be classified a disaster. It sounded more like they just rushed in, took the child, and rushed out. And that's pretty common with these cases. They don't like to linger around. They don't like to basically overstay their welcome and leave any evidence that could get them caught up. They operate like this, and they're able to operate like this because they do it in the shadows, and they put up so many protective walls around what they're doing that, I mean, you just can't really see what they're doing. So that's where I don't think it's really fair to classify it as anything, because there just wasn't enough time. They just did it so quickly. Now, from a legal perspective, I would say it's a complete disaster. To think that the grandparents, and in this case, the 14-year-old, in regards to the baby, did not even have a court order signed by a judge, piece of paperwork to remove that baby, let alone then the two twins, the grandparents have no court order signed by a judge, paperwork for the twins. I mean, that should be considered highly illegal right there. But like I said, the grandparents, they have even tried to get this paperwork, and they have been through this before, and they said that they're basically used to this, because every time that they've done this to them, this is how they do it. And they just basically take the kid. There's no proof. It's like a tornado ripping through your house. You don't even know what hit you.
Yeah, it's very hard.
And it's just like them trying to prevent. Yes, I was just going to, sorry for cutting in. I was going to say, they do that, like you said, that's a tactic. They don't want no paper trail. They just want everything to be, want people to believe and go along with what they're saying right there, Johnny, on the spot, without a paper trail. So it's going to be hard to get some paperwork from them. But I would encourage the family and everybody else involved to keep pushing for the paperwork. Make them put something down on paper.
Well, and it helps all around with their strategy, because mark my words, they've been doing this for so long. It is a strategy. When they come in and do it like that and just snatch the kids, leave nothing to go, I mean, the parents are just left completely confused and helpless. They don't know what to do after that point. And a lot of these places, like I've noticed Alabama, I mean, this is pretty quick time to go straight into court after that. So these parents are still completely confused and just basically got sucker punched in the face, and then they're having to pull themselves together to go into court when they're not even sure why they're going to court to begin with. So how are you really able to defend yourself if you don't even understand what is going on?
And you're still, sort of like you said, punched in the face, you're still shell-shocked. See, they're running that on them as well. You hit them with a traumatic event, and then you run this political process at them before they can even catch their breath. It's a very devious and scandalous process they have going on across the country, but especially here in Alabama. And
I will admit, we've been digging into DHR quite a bit since we've been here, and that has been a little bit shocking to all of my researchers and everybody, that Alabama seems to be quite open about how corrupt they are with their child protection services. I don't know if that's really because they've just gone away with it so long, or if it just is that good old boy network, or just nobody's really called them out on these things before, so they never really had to hide it.
Yes, I believe it's all because of Title IV defunding. You know, for every dollar they get in these cases, like child support, in that case when they snatch these kids and put them up for adoption, they're getting matching federal funding. In the case of child support, they're getting $5 for every dollar they write on in order. So this is all, I guarantee you, this is all about their little adoption meal they got going on and getting funding.
Absolutely.
Next thing you know, they're
going
to throw these kids on some pills. They're going to say both these 14-year-olds are going to need some medicine. They're going to do something else so they can get money coming in. It's all a scam. We all know it, and it's time we all came together and just really called them out. I would like to see them audited, the Alabama Department of Human Resources. I mean, they're just totally unhinged. And this is something else, and I'm going to step out, that you may could look at while you're researching Alabama DHR. And Janice
honestly,
just talked about Lawrence County. Take a look at Morgan County. There, they don't even get a judge to sign. The DHR can go take a warrant out on somebody for contempt of court on making payments. So they're really off the chain here in Alabama.
Well, and I think really Alabama's DHR has gone past the point of just an audit, and it's at the point that there are arrests that need to be
federal
made.
Federal takeover. Yeah, arrest and federal takeover.
I can't go into a lot of detail on this, but I will say aside from Title IV, if you're wanting to do some homework, you may want to look into a lot of the nonprofits and a lot of the people that are tied to these nonprofits and this whole money going behind this, because it has a lot more than just Title IV behind it. And like I said, I can't go into a lot of detail on that at this moment, but we've got a whole team of us working pretty diligently to get that out as soon as we can. And hopefully we can pass that off to the right hands and get some arrests made and help you guys clean up the corrupt system that your Alabama families are forced to live in.
Well, I know I can speak personally from a DHR situation with myself, my family, my husband's first wife here out of Morgan County, which was a disaster. I am an advocate in this state. I work for a nonprofit. It is called the Committee to Protect the Homeless, and the name makes you think that's all we did was homeless work, but in reality, we are an investigative agency with professionals, pretty smart folk that came together and put together a nonprofit so that they could do some good in Birmingham. Now, with that being said, this nonprofit over 10 years did and does good work in Birmingham. They fire about 60 police officers and 3 judges. There's a lot of people that were doing wrong in a high place that no longer have their job. And I can say, as the director of the Huntsville Office of Community to Protect the Homeless, in my work 3 years as an investigator, I myself have witnessed so many sickening things that it doesn't matter how many times my life gets threatened. And now it's a joke. I can't wait for it. I know you're fixing to say it. I've been heard it so many times. You can't say to me now, and to those that are listening, don't say you're going to hurt me. That is not going to stop me. You are just going to give me fuel. Now, with that being said, I shouldn't have to say that. I was threatened by the chief deputy investigator of Shelby County 4 months ago because one of our church members was treated quite horribly. There was a mistake with the warrant. 2 miles away was the actual address. The name wasn't right. I mean, there's a lot of questions coming out of Shelby County. They get away with a lot of things because they are protected. Shelby County is one of the counties that we pursued cases out of the CPH. And that was the hardest nut to crack because those boys down there, they keep it together and they keep their mouths shut. They have a tight game. But with that being said, you're left with, though, a bunch of idiots that don't know the law, and so they having that good old boy system and that closed mouth way of happening here in the South, the good old boy system, it just works. You don't know how. You don't know why. There's no rules. Well, if there was rules, you wouldn't be told, because that's how it works in Alabama. You can show up and hope to God you get to go home. That should be what is written on the front of the courthouse. Just show up and hope to God you get to go home. Now, Shelby County is a rat hole. And, Miko, I know that you could go into a lot of things that y'all are uncovering. But I, for one, speaking from a civil rights activist in this country, a civil rights leader in the state of Alabama who has been involved with many investigations, I will simply say what I have heard from two women who was in the room when the father of the child stepped in, which was considered an egregious mistake, I would say, on the hospital's part. So since Jonah can't make it to the show tonight, I will give some hearsay information. This is what I was told, folks. The mother and the father of the child stepped into the room. No one from the hospital or security approached the family or the 14-year-old and let them know that for her, she has accused this man of rape. So the father and the mother walked into the room. It was described by these two females who didn't know who they were that they waltzed into the room like they owned the place. The boy went and sat and jumped up on the bed with her. She scoured out of the bed and went into the corner of the room and cowered down, leaving him holding the baby because he had took it from her arms, the baby, and he was cooing and eyeing over this child. It took a moment for the room to settle and for the two women to understand that this was the boy that was being accused, and they thought it was a horrible, it was not polite what they said and how this family acted. So, once again, this is hearsay information, but I want you to know first, I in the past have worked as a security professional inside a hospital, Huntsville Hospital, to be factual, and I know that it is not corporate policy to allow someone who has been accused of something like this to walk up in the room without a word being said when his only mission there at that hospital was to collect a DNA specimen so that they could secure that this was the father of the child. There was no need for him to be allowed without any security escort, the police being there, DHR representative, which once again I find horrendous that DHR can be stuck up this family's ass like a hemorrhoid, but they can't stand next to the kid that created the situation that they were there for so that they could write a pickup order, and when that order is executed, they cash a $5,000 stipend check right off the bat because it's an infant, and then they go pick up the 14-year-old mom, $12,500. Then they go pick up the 14-year-old brother, $12,500. And if I do the math, even though I graduated in Coleman County, that's still $30,000. They made $30,000 in a 24-48-hour period, folks, and not a legal piece of paper crossed best. I suspect from the information that I have gathered is that this is a social worker that needed to make her quota of 3 a month. And you know what? I did the count. 1, 2, 3. So if the quota I am told is 3 a month and this overworked social worker got 3 in 2 days, she can coach the rest of the month. She ain't got to go pick up another kid. So first off, Shelby County, feel safe because you got at least 15 days before she's going to get in a hurry and going to come get your kids. But it is atrocious. It is horrible that the 14-year-old child was treated so disrespectfully that she in her own hospital room has to cower in the corner. Now, Miko, I'm sorry I had to go into that. I wanted to so much speak that on my Twitter or my Facebook page. I wanted the world to hear a little bit. And I'm not telling you folks what happened at their house, which was worse. this is just the beginning of the stories that will come out, that this child was not respected enough. Look, they told her to get rid of it. It.
Yeah.
They told her. Just like Miko said, folks, they told her to get rid of it. Now, for those that don't know, this is the state of Alabama. We still have laws on the books that you can't marry a black man in this state if you're a white woman. This situation is a white female with an African-American father of this child. So what I suspect, when they could not get the money that they would receive as a stipend for going through the process of the abortion, which is also you get paid either way, folks. They gonna get their money. So either they got the abortion or they got the child. I want you to understand, America, that that is the central issue. This case is going to reverberate across this country because it just exposed the system in one of the most horrendous ways possible. Let's throw a little racism on top of it. That baby's going to be a mixed child. Well, here in Alabama, I'm just going to come out and say it. There's a lot of people that say, you know what's probably best, because that child's going to have to grow up knowing that he don't know if he's black or white. So it's probably best that we suggest that she end her pregnancy. Now, that's pretty tough, folks, but I want you to know that I hear that quite often here in the South. Once again, we are the Bible Belt. There's a church on every street corner, and if I hear it so often that I remember it verbatim, then you have to think that we've got some pretty brutal religious laws down here. You can't marry a black man, and you can't have his baby. And this child had the audacity to love her child, no matter how the child got there. But DHR decided that they were going to get paid because what they saw was a situation where information I am gathering is pointing to that the grandfather, which was the father now of all of these kids that were in his home, that he's been raising five of them, I believe, being a retired police officer in his career, he had opportunities to go along with the good old boy system and do something that was probably moral indignant to him, because his choice on a lot of occasions was not to go along with his coworkers. He was a rebel without a cause. He tried to be a good cop. So that's going to give him a pretty bad rep. Miko just earlier said that the family's gone through about 20 years of heartache here. Well, he's been a police officer about that time and getting out of it. So there's a few good officers, and a lot of times that those people put their lives, their family, on the line to continue to be a good man or a good woman. So I don't know him personally. I'm, of course, giving my audience hearsay information. But the fact that I have heard this from a couple of ways, a couple of different people, I'm going to meet this man by the end of the week. I will be at the rally at 8 a.m. at the Shelby County Courthouse that will start the process of the day that should end with a court hearing. I can't understand how this child has been kept away from her brother while she was ever removed from the family, except just as Miko talked about, and I'm fixing to hand it back over to him because he is an expert in the investigation of CPS. And so across this country, this man has investigated the financial reasonings for why your child just got taken. So with that being said, I want to say that I support this police officer grandfather in getting his children back. I support the fact that he bucked the system and did it right no matter what. I support him even more that the system, because he did it right, is now got their boot on the back of his neck. And I want, and I'm asking for everybody, if you're listening to this show, I want you to send that man positive thoughts and prayers, his wife, of course everybody in the family. But I know that he knows exactly what he's up against, and he is going to need your prayers, because from what I'm hearing, he did it right, folks. And so I want you to pray for this man so that he can get his family back, because by him doing it right in a southern town and then his granddaughter having the audacity of getting in her, getting in the way, how they say it down here, that, you know, you're in a way, meaning you're pregnant, you're knocked up, and it turning into this disaster where so many on the civil rights, federal civil rights side, I could just start, I need a ticker tape to start hitting how many times I think I could hit them with a civil rights violation, and that's just speaking to three people. So,
yeah,
I want to hear this, Miko, and I apologize for going on a rant there, but I have received lots of information. I have been on this case from my county. I've not yet made it to Shelby, but I am just shocked, folks, that it has gone this far, that they have just not sit down and said, you know what, we're sorry, we made a mistake. Why they continue this, I do not know. But, Miko, please, can you give us some insight as an audience? And then, Janice, I know you can also because you live the system. Can you give this audience any idea or clue as just how corrupt the money is in CPS? How does this work? Tell us.
Well, and I've only done two articles on this so far, and honestly, one of the reasons behind that is I'm kind of waiting for this next court date to get done. I know basically all CPS systems are very vengeful, and I don't want this little girl to, or her baby or her brother, to basically get retaliation for my actions. So I'm kind of biting my tongue at the moment. They kind of have forced me into that position, or at least my best wishes for this whole outcome has kind of forced me into that position. But one thing I did touch on the second article I did was Diana Dunning, who Diane Dunning is the Assistant Attorney General for the DHR, and she actually started a nonprofit organization 11 years ago called Heart Gallery Alabama. Now, Heart Gallery is a nonprofit who basically recruits photographers to take pictures of children that need adoption. That sounds pretty simple enough, but once we pulled some of their tax paper or tax files, then 2014, just for example, the organization pulled in $217,000 and spent $200,000. And now, remind you, we're talking about just simply recruiting photographers to take pictures of children that need adoption. We were going through some of what their spending was, which we got kicked off the site as we were going through it. But we were able to take screenshots and account for $80,000 of that, which basically went to traveling, paying out employees, and mileage. So that's where I say these nonprofits are really important with where a lot of this money comes from. And it does go a lot deeper than just a Title IV. And the people involved, you can even go to that second article, because I did post all of those tax papers there, and you can start digging around and see some of the names involved as well. And that's just a slight glimpse. I mean, that is not even cracking the door. At best, that might be raising the blinds on the window. It's very, very deep here. In fact, the number of names that we're at so far is just mind-blowing. It's very hard to keep track of. Luckily, I have an awesome team of researchers who really, they've really just been busting their ass since we hit the ground. And they plan on not stopping anytime soon, which is really, I'm really blessed for that, because there's no way even, I think we have 13 people working on this right now, and there's just no way a single individual could even start to uncover this. I mean, even with 13 people knowing what they're doing, we're still having problems getting to everywhere, just because it is so deep and it is so twisted, and so many people are getting paid out from the removal of these children. So it really, and you're calling, the more you dig around in different CPS systems around the country, no matter what it's called, DCF, DFS, DHR, it's all the same system, and they're all operating the same. Just some are a lot more corrupt than others. And I have to admit, Alabama is one of the worst states. I do know there are a couple that are worse, like Michigan. I've been told Michigan is, you can have your rights severed in Michigan within 72 hours of having your child removed. And Alabama still does a closed court. Like Friday, I do not believe the family's even going to be allowed into the courtroom. But Michigan, it's open court. I mean, Sherry, me and you right now could walk into a courtroom in Michigan and just watch families get their rights terminated all day long. So in places like Michigan, they don't even care to hide it anymore. You know, they're just publicly doing it because they know that nobody can stop them. So,
well, as luck would have it there, Miko, last summer I had a client who had a child of 17, 4 or 5 months away from turning 18, who needed help getting out of Michigan in a bad situation. I assisted my client through DHR in Madison County in securing this child until her 18th birthday so that she could make the decision to either go back home or do what she needed to do. So that gave me the opportunity because it was about a 3-week case that I worked hard and heavy from the beginning of being introduced to the person needing the help to the outcome of the case. I learned a lot. And so the only state that I do know of, coincidentally, that I know their ways about them is Michigan. And I would tend to agree because that's what gave me the urge to learn more about this DHR system. Because my job as an advocate, they came to me and asked for our help. It was assigned to me. And me working the case, I learned a lot. And it opened my eyes into just how messed up this situation is, and not to mention what happened to me personally in the DHR court of Morgan County, which, Janice, you probably seen. I was told to my face that as long as the child hasn't murdered anybody, that they do not care if the mother is teaching the child how to shoplift or break into cars or any other things that I may be suggesting. But what I'm saying, folks, is I was told to my face that, look, unless this child murders somebody, don't come telling us this. We don't care until he kills somebody. And I'm like, what do you mean kill somebody? Oh, well, when he kills somebody, then he can have, he's going to go to jail. I said, well, he's going to go to jail when he stole that car. Oh, well, killing somebody is 30, 40 years. Stealing a car is 15. So it comes down to we're going to judge how we're going to judge you by how much money we're fixing to make on your ass. And so one way you can look at that is that's how criminal court goes, and that is how DHR goes. Janice, weigh in on this issue. Just how important, now, mind you, me and you worked a case, we've worked two cases with DHR, one plus Rose County and one Blount County. So with our work with the church and the advocacy that we do, we have already had a taste of what, and just how quickly did one of our church members, just how quickly did they lose a child over an outrageous allegation that came from a disgruntled family member? I mean, this was a 2-week, it took us 2 weeks, two to 3 weeks to fix that situation over a sentence said from a disgruntled family member that there was nothing. It was somebody was pissed off and called DHR, and it took us how many weeks to get them children back?
2 weeks to get them back, and the mama, you know, she was just, it just really, really messed with her. It messed with the children. I have to talk to the young girl every once in a while. How would you say it? Therapy. I do therapy on her. I help her because I try to understand why this happened, and she's only 4 years old. She don't understand why they wouldn't let her see her mama over stupid allegations. And it took Sherry a couple of calls and me going down there just once for them to drop the case. And I told them, I was like, look, this has happened to her over and over and over again. This doesn't need to happen anymore. And it hasn't. There have been no more allegations brought up, and they have left the mother, they've left the family alone.
Well, that's a good thing. And why they left that family alone, Miko will tell you, it's because somebody stood up for that family. And so DHR ain't in the business of fighting their battles. They'd rather just come in and destroy you and say next. They're not going to fight for what, you know, they can't stand up for what they did because chances are they're illegally in the wrong for what they just did. So when you find somebody that will stand up for you to DHR, you just elevated the chances of fixing your case tremendously because now DHR is going to be on the defensive instead of being on the offensive. Now they have
Absolutely.
To defend their actions. And when that happens, Miko, why don't you tell the people what happens when someone stands up and defends against DHR?
Well, you can really go one of two ways. They're either going to retaliate out of anger for somebody messing with them, or they're going to back off. But it really just depends on how you stand up, which that was one thing I was really wanting to get out there to anybody listening is that, first off, the parent is not the most important one in the situation. It is not about you defending yourself. It's not that really comes second. The number one in the situation is the child. And I'm going to say right now, the guardian ad litem, they're worthless. Gals are 100% worthless because most of the time they're coming from the same system that is trying to get that child. So one of the first things you really want to do is get an attorney for that child, not for the parent, but for the child. How these guys are able to operate, how they do, that they corner these children off by themselves, and then they have these gals and these social workers and all these other people speak for the child, and you never actually really hear what the child's saying. As soon as you get an attorney set up for the child, they can't do that anymore, and that strips their power away. They can't have the child alone one-on-one anymore. They have to have that attorney present to talk to the child, and they really, it just, everything starts to completely fall apart from there. The other thing that I just told about today, which we'll see how this works out, was requesting an administrative hearing. What that means is that if you are having problems in court, you can tell that there's just a lot of unfair decisions going on, then call for an administrative hearing. And that means that that judge is going to have to answer to a federal judge and won't be able to move any further until he gets that permission from a federal judge. Now, that's, like I said, I was just told about that today. So that's just a new tactic that's kind of where a few of the families I talked to, you know, it's going to start being tested out. But the important thing is getting that child an attorney before, if you have warning that they are investigating you or they're trying to talk to the child, if you can get the child set up with an attorney before they even remove them, that is really your best bet. But if you are in a situation like we find this family in now, get the child an attorney, basically no matter what. That needs to be number one priority to basically strip away the Child Protection Service's power. And that goes across the board. That is not just Alabama. That's not just Kansas. Anywhere in this nation, you need to get that child an attorney first and foremost.
Okay, folks, let me explain what a guardian ad litem is. That is a person, usually always an attorney, that is given the position of being the voice of, in this case, the infant. I worked with a guardian ad litem on this case out of Michigan who had not even talked to the child that she was speaking for on the day that we were in court. She met the child at court and had already six pages, I saw, of nice words printed out that she was going to say on behalf of a child that she hadn't met yet. So that tells you one thing. They had already made the decision that the child would go back to Michigan because she was 4 months from turning 18 and her mother wanted her back. The child wanted an opportunity to get away from a bad home where she was being told it was okay to be a prostitute. So the question for me and how I dealt with this issue was to present that it was an emergency in the case of the child so that I could override the laws of Michigan and have the child stay here. I, in turn, then became the guardian ad litem as the advocate because I had her fire the one that was assigned to her. So in this case, what Miko is describing is a situation where if the child, the infant, it doesn't matter if you're 17, it did in her case, if that person doesn't have their own attorney with their, you know, their agenda in mind, they will be assigned a guardian ad litem, which is an officer of the court that is always already, they already know before they walk in the room what my client needs to do because it has already been negotiated before a word has been said. And it's always negotiated towards DHR, CPS, so they can get that money. But I do have a solution. And here's the solution. I would like to start the conversation in the state of Alabama where, folks, we need to come together and understand that if we don't support one group of, if it's just one group of people, if we don't support somebody who is out there fighting and trying to get these changes with financial help, with your backing, with your votes, if we don't stand up and get behind a group of people that are trying to change the system, then it'll never be changed. So with that being said, I had an epiphany while we spoke, and that is this. If we set up a nonprofit, and that nonprofit is funded through donations or funding that I will apply for under a 501c3 status, and my nonprofit is a nonprofit that provides pro bono work assigned to each person, each newborn in the state of Alabama, I will write it into the law that I don't care what county you're in. If you're fixing to be looked at by DHR, you automatically fall under my nonprofit and you're assigned one of my pro bono attorneys who will counsel you and the family through the situation. Now, I will have to have that funded. But that's how this problem in the state of Alabama, Miko, is going to be fixed. Because now that I've said it out loud and put it before the Lord and said, you know what, Lord, I need this, it's going to happen. So I would suggest in all 50 states that some brave soul come out and you take advantage of the nonprofit system, which we're trying to explain to you is how these guys get all this money. Well, I'm fixing to teach you how to get this money. You have an idea. You set up a 501c3. You go find somebody who knows how to write a grant, and then you take your vision and the grant writer, and you ask for funds. I, on my side here in Alabama, what our church plans on doing, we are going to take this federally. We're going to say that, hold on a minute, my argument as an advocate, adverse in a lot of federal law, I feel like the rights of this child has been violated. He, upon his birth, was a legal status human being in the state of Alabama, and nobody asked him, was it okay to rip him from his mother's titty while he was in the hospital? So we need to establish federally a habeas corpus hearing would take within 24 hours. If they had filed, I'm not going to go into the strategy of attorneys, but something I would do as an advocate, if this had been my case before any of these other players had showed on the field, and I'm telling you advocates in this country how to do this, you, if this person comes to you and asks for help, this is how Sherry would have handled it. I would have immediately asked for a habeas corpus hearing in federal court for the civil rights violations of having the person ripped from the healthy home, meaning it was in a hospital. That was a safe environment. There was no legal reason to remove the baby from a safe environment. Hit them federally so that the hearing had to happen within a 24-hour period. The magistrate, which you would go before first, not having a written order before a judge or anything on a piece of paper, would be forced to have released them immediately. That's how would handle it.
Now, this is a constantly evolving battle. And I think that the habeas corpus is starting to get out. I know just recently we've had several cases in Kansas where they filed their habeas, and it was just completely squashed out. They shot it down. So I think that it is a good strategy to at least try it first, but I think we're starting to get to that point where they're getting wise to it. And so they're starting to find ways to shoot those down. So now, like I said, it's a constantly evolving battle because you're talking about a lot of money here. If you took all of our drug money, all of our illegal gun money, and put that together, you wouldn't even equal half of what's going on with our are human trafficking. And do not think that I misspoke there. 100% what is going on all throughout this country is human trafficking. This is legal human trafficking. So
a lot of the homeless children on the street were children in homes that left for and ran for their lives because they felt safer being homeless on the street than living in the situation where they themselves were frightened, thinking that they were fixing to turn into some of those kids you hear about that take a trip across seas and never come home. So I've heard horrible rumors, sir, of human trafficking. Well, I'm just going to throw it also out there. I've heard sex trafficking rumors within the CPS community. I've heard about quotas, people calling wanting blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids, and lo and behold, Mrs. Eugene Bailey down the street, she came home from work and somebody had took her baby, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed baby. So it is pretty horrible that what we're doing on this case, it's scratching the surface of a system that needs to be exposed so that it can be changed. Now, Janet, let's get back to you for just a minute. Now, I know we've got about 4 minutes, 5 minutes left into the show. What do you think we could do to get the word out? Or what would you say, being someone who's in the system, what would you tell the listeners? How can we come together and get this and make this happen, these changes happen?
Well, you know, I really don't know how to do that myself, but, you know, just everybody come together and we make a little noise. Everybody that has been the victim of this, I mean, that's the only way that, you know, we're going to get our voices out there if we all come together and be like, hey, this is wrong. This has happened to me. We don't want this to go on for the future children of Alabama or even of the, you know, of the United States. It's just wrong to come in and take someone's child on false allegations or, you know, and a lot of it is false allegations for a lot of people, but it's very traumatizing to the child over the years for this to happen. I know that it has been for me. I'm married and I have 2 children now, but it took me a while to get over everything that happened to me. And, I've just recently, this is the first time I've talked about it besides to my husband or to a therapist when I was a child. So.
Well, I'm thankful that you've come on this show and shared some of that. I know personally that this is you opening up and sharing your story, and I understand how difficult that is. Now, before we lose the rest of the show, we got a few minutes. But, Miko, I didn't know if you caught the newspaper, but I wanted to throw this to you. You know that one county away from where you're at, or Tom, sorry, 2 counties away from where you're at, Marshall County broke ground on a $5 million DHR new building yesterday. So, folks, how do you need, in Marshall County, we need a $5 million DHR building? Seriously, you know how you get that $5 million? You go take a lot of babies. That's how you get $5 million so you can have a new building in Marshall County.
Well, now, you know, and really, I know that's short on time, so I kind of am bouncing back from.
I want you to finish the show because you've got all the information. You finish the show for us.
Well, we're thinking about taking a new direction because one problem is that it's hard to get people to believe this is happening. Nobody wants to believe that Child Protection Services is wrongfully taking children. And so, you know, for the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, we've been putting focus on letting parents tell their side of the stories. And I think that's the wrong approach because people can say those parents are lying. They're drug addicts, they're abusing, they're doing something. So today I actually got off the phone with a family that we've been working with in Kansas, and she actually brought it up. They have a 3-year-old that they are getting back. Actually, they just went to court, I believe, today and got their temporary permanent custody, but DCF, which that's what it is in Kansas, is still fighting them on it. But she was saying that the 3-year-old completely just has a meltdown anytime he's about to get in a car or anything. He starts screaming. He says he doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to be taken away. And this is a 3-year-old child we're talking about. So we are starting to look for video or audio or whatever of these children and showing what these children that have been through the system have gone through, because it is, I will give people that, that an adult can lie, but a child and showing the trauma they've been through, you can't make that up. So, like, that grandmother is going to try and get me some video of that three-year-old, just showing him the car and showing what happens when he sees that car, or any car for that matter. And I think that might be kind of a new angle to kind of get people to wake up, because it is, I mean, people really do not want to think that this sort of evil is going on, because at the end of the day, that's what this is. It's pure evil. You're talking about our children. And they are just taking them, they're cornering them off, they're using them for money. In Sedgwick County, Kansas, we found in 2013, they put 271 children into SINC cases, which is Child in Need of Care. They could only account for 223 of those children. So we're talking about almost 50 children that somehow just vanished once they
Common Core,
the
Common Core my ass, Miko, Common Core my ass.
Right. So
yeah, see, that's how that works. That's 50 kids just went missing. Where do you think they went?
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, that's, there's a lot of problems in this. Like I said, this is just a very evil thing. And, you know, evil's good at what it does, especially when it's been doing it for so long and it has so many people blinded to what it's doing. It's, I mean, at this point, it's able to act right in front of us and nobody can even see what's going on. And then even beyond seeing, though, that's not the bad part, because it's easy to get people that don't see it yet to see what's going on. That part's simple. What's hard is how many people just deny it and do not want to accept that it's going on. That's where we need to figure out ways to start getting these people to open their eyes to what's going on. We're going to lose this fight as long as the majority of the country does not believe this is a problem. So it's just, it's just going to take educating people constantly.
Well, it's going to take a loud voice. And I know that I am all about standing up for the rights of the little man or the guy that's right, even if the guy I'm going up against is the biggest bully in the room. In this situation across this country, Kansas, I have heard so many horror stories out from the Midwest that it rivals the South. I don't know who's worse, honestly. But
I know that we
are open with our corruption, Miko, because we don't care. Our governor doesn't care. Speaker of the House doesn't care. Nobody cares. How many, the last two or three mayors and most of the city council members in Birmingham, Alabama, have all ended up in prison, and nobody cares. That is Alabama.
Yeah.
You spend, you get your money, put it in the bank, they'll spend you 6 years, come home to a fat check. That's retirement in the state of Alabama.
See, and I have noticed that you guys do have a lot of political figures that have some very
I just exposed the new retirement system in the state of Alabama. Oh, they probably wrote a law protecting their pension check. So even if they are brought up on corruption charges, and that's why they went to jail, they're still going to get that pension check. Oh, I believe we've got a caller to call in. Welcome to the show. This is Sherry. Who's speaking, please? Okay, so that caller wants to stay quiet. That's okay. But, yes, in the state of Alabama, Miko, we are a special kind of corrupt here in this state. We are so open with it. And at the same time, even if you call us on it, even if you take us to court, I mean, the deal is worked out by how much money you paid up front to your attorney for attorney fees. If you can bump that up to $10,000 or $20,000, you can get out of most criminal charges here in the state. According to information I have. So you want to at least have $10,000 in your pocket if you accidentally run over and kill somebody. Just want to throw that out there, Alabama. That's another way I'm helping you guys. And attorneys, just raise the fee to $15. So you're probably going to cuss me later, but that's how it works. So I'm going to help expose this system because I have worked as an investigator, Janice, has worked investigating, helping me on these cases. We are exposing this system. So you're exactly right, Mika. What we need is a group of people that will stand up and say, wait a minute. That's not what's fixing to happen. What's fixing to happen is you are going to have to answer for your actions, take responsibility for your actions, and explain to these fine folks why their kids are crying and having panic attacks because they have been treated horribly, like coincidentally, the story, I believe, out of Michigan yesterday of a couple who had just received, received their brand spanking new DHR baby and went to celebrate at a restaurant, leaving the baby in the car while they attended dinner, and then come to find out they forgot the child when the fire department showed up, when the ambulances showed up, and when the police cars showed up. For 10 minutes, the police cars and everybody with sirens had been on scene while the couple still dined in the restaurant. It took them running a tag, getting the name, and walking into the restaurant and saying, Mr. and Mrs. Wu, could you please come to the front? We have a situation where somebody walked by a car and saw your dead baby, and we're trying to get you on the phone if you don't mind putting down the chopsticks. That's exactly what just happened yesterday in another state. So what I'm saying is, Janice, I can't allow this kind of behavior to continue where right off the bat, getting your brand new baby was not enough to help you to remember that you just got a brand new baby because you were waiting on that steak and sushi. Now, what the hell?
Yeah. That's pretty messed up.
What the hell? We can't allow this. And you know what? It just takes anger. It's okay to be angry. I am furious, and I am trying my best to sit in this chair and hold this phone and do this call. I want to get up and punch a wall because I want to punch somebody's face. This is horrible. You need to stand up. And in Alabama, you're not standing up alone. Brothers and sisters,
yeah.
I'll get there first. The church, the Venerable Church of Warrior, Alabama, Janice, Chris Rushing, the members of his church, we are going to get there first. And you can come stand with us. I assure you, if I'm standing there, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure everybody goes home. Because it doesn't mean that it does nobody any good to create a situation where it makes it worse. But I can show up to a situation and help to make everyone understand that at least this side knows their civil rights, and they don't have an attorney right now, but if you do for 20 minutes, she'll have one on scene. And this side, who has all the power and the badges and the guns, they're going to know that at least we can't shoot nobody right now because they're not giving us any excuse. And that's how you do it, folks. Don't do it in a way that you're giving them an excuse to put you in jail or put you in the grave. You can come together as a group, make strength in numbers, and show up like you can show up Friday morning at 8 a.m. at the Shelby County Courthouse and stand for this child, because tomorrow it will be your child, or next week it's going to be your neighbors, or that kid that your kid, she's fixing to graduate college and now she's going to have her baby, and somebody's going to be pissed off and call and say she's a crack whore, and 20 minutes after she gets home from work, she finds out that your grandson, the firstborn in your family, has just been taken by DHR. If we allow this to continue, folks, it is going to hit everybody. Now, we've got another caller calling into the show. Caller, I want to welcome you to United Voices. If you'd like to speak or have anything to say towards this, please do so now. Okay, so that caller wants to stay on the line, and that's fine, too. Miko, back to you. What can we do here in Alabama? What can the fine folks of Alabama who now that they've heard this show have decided that they want to stand up and maybe they have something that's happened to them? Can you give your personal or can you give your information, contact information, that if there's anybody in this state that has had something happen to them and they want Mika Hayes to come help them, as you have helped this family. Can you give them that information?
Well, and you know, one thing is we have backed off independent stories for the most part. We take them here and there still. It's just we were getting so bombed down with them, myself and a couple other writers. We were really, I mean, it just wears on you doing these individual stories. And at the end of the day, it's not really attacking the bigger problems. So what we've been doing in the shadows is we are trying to attack the actual problem, the money trails. Because, I mean, that's how this works. Once you off their money, that's how you stop them. But, you know, there are these circumstances where it is just such a horrendous thing that we do still step in. And one thing we're always looking for is whistleblowers. We protect our whistleblowers. We 100% do. We've had a couple come forward now, and you always can. You can email me at miko@dailyhaze.com. That's M-E-K-O at D-A-I-L-Y-H-A-Z-E.com. But basically, we need people to come forward. We need people not to be afraid anymore, because that's the other part of their tactic. First, they got these children who are not able to be touched by anybody. They have people speaking for them. They don't have their family by them. They're scared. They're manipulated. Then on the other side, they just, and excuse my language, but they scare the living shit out of these parents, to where these parents are just cornered off, and they think they're completely alone. There's nothing they can do. If they do do anything, they're going to completely lose their child, or they're going to come back and go after their other children, or it's just going to be a constant retaliation thing. So,
okay, if I can just get in here, that brings the show to a close.
Oh.
And Sherry, you can pick this back up on another episode. I want to thank all the guests, and a special thank to Miko Hayes. With the Daily Haze. We have a lot of stories here in Alabama, and I look forward to talking to you. I got a couple of stories I know you would be interested in.
Oh, yeah, please do. Please do. I'm always all ears.
All right, thank you, Marcus. Janice and Miko, thank you very much for joining the show. I'm just going to ask for prayers for all the children in the United States of America that are under the kidnap order of CPS, DHR, folks. Let's just pray for everybody. But after that prayer's over, let's go ahead and get up out of the chair and let's do something about it. Thanks for joining me here at United Voices on the Marcus J. Eccles Bringing Voices to Power Network. I want to thank Dennis Brushen. I want to thank Miko Hayes and Marcus Eccles for teaching me at this show. As soon as I get more information Friday, I will come out with another show Friday after the attorneys come out of the courtroom. That courtroom is an open court. I will not be allowed inside, but I will be waiting outside the doors to speak to the attorneys when they come out, find out what is fixing to happen to this family. And I will get that information to you quickly. Thank you for joining the show. Folks, you got to stand up now. That's it. We're done. You've heard the story. It's time. It's time to stand up. If you need help, you know me. My name's Sherry Conley. You know how to get in touch with me. I may not be able to help everybody, but we can all work together on finding a way to get everybody help. That's what's important. Let's get everybody help. Let's get this word out. Like Nico is saying, stop thinking that this is not happening. It is happening. I'm yelling at you right now on the radio show about it. This guy sent his wife in Shelby County, and he's telling me about it. Janice lived it. And you know something I haven't spoke about yet? I lived it. My father was a molester. I reported his molestation. You know how it ended up for me? It ended up with him walking out of court with a smile on his face and my mother serving 10 days in jail for crime. In the courtroom, with the audacity to cry after the judge said they're not guilty. That baby girl, Patty Legs, was wrong and was tied with the baby powder. I don't know what turned him on so much. But I do know this. I grew up in this system, and I was screwed in this system. And I'm angry. I'm angry for this child. I'm angry for this baby. I'm angry for the state, and I'm angry for the country. If you want to stand up with us. Stand up with me out there at 8 a.m. at the county courthouse Friday morning. And that is how you start to take back your state. That is how you start to take back your country. And folks, it is how you start to take back your pride. And remember that you are a patriot in a country of freedom. We are not slaves. They are legislating us with laws that make us think we are. This is the United States of America. We invented freedom. If you want to learn how to take back your pride, you want to be an American, and you want to be a taxpayer, show up Friday morning, and I'll show you how to start. I'll shake your hand and hug your neck and thank you for being there. Because I was standing there alone, but I love to stand there with a crowd. And I hope we got 100 people standing there looking them straight in the face and saying, not no, but hell no. Hell no, Alabama. We're done. You can take this money and you can shove it. We don't need $5 million DHR building in Marshall County. There ain't nothing wrong with the one they got now. And if you build a building for $5 million, you got to hire enough people to work in it. And each worker has to make her own money back each month because she's paying her own salary by taking your kid. That is the scam of the system. You take as many in so that you are paying your own salary. This is Sherry Saunders with United Voices.